All right. Yeah, strangely, whoever's sitting here looks dark. I guess it's because
big dark eyes and stuff.
Oh well. Don't know what we can
maybe
do about that.
Light, maybe.
All right. Well, welcome everyone. Got a nice group in the Zendo tonight and online. I will greet the people online, and then the people in the Zendo can introduce themselves. So, starting with Lori and your sweet cat, Chris, Marv, Mick, Bob, Joshua, Karen, Tyler, Gaffel, Betty, Ellen. Julie, Sabrina, Ruthann, and connecting to audio is Paulette. And in the Zendo,
Dennis.
Dave, Shoketsu,
Erica,
Sophie,
Susan,
Andrew, Carson,
Coral,
Ted.
Ted and Domio. All right.
So Domio?
Yeah.
I think what's happening with the darkness is there's a lot of white background in the frame right now. So if you could adjust the camera so that it has more of you and the green background and less of that white,
well,
change the aperture.
I don't think there's, Susan's going to be sitting in a chair. So it changes the orientation here.
Okay.
There's plenty of people sat in a chair. All right. Marv, your basket looks beautiful. okay. Trying to think. Okay, so Jukai ceremony is on Sunday, June 5th. So that's about just a little over a month away. That will be in person and online, so please attend that. Even if you aren't receiving the precepts this year, if you've received them in the past, it's a sweet, you kind of do it again. And to witness, I think we'll have somewhere around, like, I don't know, it's 7, 8, or 9. There's still some people on the fence, new folks. About, I think, 5 people in person and 4 people taking them from afar on Zoom. So please plan to be there. And if you are somebody who's been around for a couple years and you're a regular participant, please know that I'm going to be trying to arrange to go on sabbatical again this July. And it's a sweet time for the classes and talks. I mean, the precept classes are led by people, but in July, the classes and the Sunday talks are led by others. And one of the things that's really cool is something called a Way-Seeking Mind talk. And that is where you share your spiritual journey, essentially. Things that challenges you faced and things that you have learned. And they're usually very, very inspiring. You get to know somebody and really learn something. So everyone has a Way-Seeking Mind talk inside them. And it's very valuable and sweet thing for the Sangha to enjoy that. So be thinking about that. I have a couple of volunteers already, but I have, that's 8 slots to fill in July. So if you are interested in leading a discussion or sharing a Way-Seeking Mind talk or something, please let me know. I think that is it for now. Anything else I should announce or any questions about any of that? All right. I will turn it over then to Susan.
Okay, hi, I am Susan, and I came here in 2014 and didn't want to take the precept for years because I just saw them as rules and I'd been away from religion for decades. But the more I listened to them, the more appreciative I became of them, as they're just a way to look at ourselves and our behavior and our thoughts. So I took the precepts in 2020. During COVID in the park. And this year I became brave enough to give a talk. So I looked through them and I picked don't dwell on past mistakes. And I thought that's pretty easy. Don't want to beat up on myself. But the more I studied it, it's a lot more layered than that, like all the precepts are. The plan is I'm going to talk about 5 or 10 minutes and then we'll have breakout rooms. We'll come back and share, and I'll talk some more, and then hopefully there'll be time for a general discussion.
So, can I ask quite quickly before you get going, Susan, sure. As the Zoom host, how many people are you planning on having in the breakout room?
Probably about 3.
Okay, thank you.
4, thank you, yeah, okay. So this is precept 6. And originally, the Buddha said it was, do not dwell on past mistakes, create ignorance from wisdom. And then Bodhidharma said, in the realm of the flawless Dharma, not expounding upon error is the precept of not dwelling on past mistakes. And then Dogen expanded them for not just the monks, but for the lay too. Always found it fascinating that over, 2,000 years ago, they had the same problems we did, gossiping about others and causing problems in the Zendo. So Dogen wrote, in the Buddha Dharma, there is one path, one Dharma, one realization of practice. Do not engage in fault finding. Do not condone haphazard talk. It's been said many ways. Diane Risotto wrote, I take up the way of speaking of others with openness and possibility. Or I read, I resolve not to speak of the faults of others, but to be understanding and sympathetic. So it's about not speaking of others in a degrading way, either behind their backs or to them directly. It's seeing others in a respectful way. I think of it as kind speech, even if the other person is not listening. It could be about talking about ourselves and our mistakes, but mostly it's about speaking about other people. And there is a difference. You can share information about others without putting them down. For instance, if a friend told you, so-and-so is picking me up to bring me to the event, you could roll your eyes and say, oh my goodness, they are never on time. I don't know, I wouldn't count on them. Or you could say, in my experience, sometimes they're late. You just might want to plan on that. So one thing to just give information, it's another thing to roll your eyes. When we speak disparagingly of others, what do we get out of it? It hurts others and it hurts ourselves because we're not being kind, but we all do it. I have done it a lot. You may be angry, you get in a fight with someone, and then you call up a friend and you just vent and say what a horrible person they are. Or you're with friends and you gossip. I have a friend who I think has some strange behavior, and in the past, I have delighted in telling other friends about this person. Can you believe this, and can you believe that? And then they come up with a diagnosis for, and we, when I could have just said, I'm helping this person because of this and that. And so I've really become aware of that, trying not to do that. And even as kids, we do it. It just seems somehow natural. I remember I had a couple neighborhood friends when I was in grade school, and one of the girls was a little chubby, I guess, because we called her Pudgy Pink Oink Oink. I don't think to her face, but I'm sure she must have heard it. I don't know, and to this day, I feel badly about that. So it's very easy to put others down without thinking about it. So why do we talk about the faults of others? Fault is sort of a funny word. It can mean something strange, unethical, immoral, unkind, stupid that others do. Though Robert Aiken wrote that a so-called fault is a weak place where character can change. We may talk about that later. So right now, I thought we would start with some breakout rooms for about maybe 10 minutes where we'd share why we do this, if you do. Maybe give an example like I did. And then we will come back and share, and we'll talk more about the thinking and what goes into all of this, because it's also about our thinking. So,
how long do you want
them? About 10 minutes, breakout rooms. So the question is, why do we enjoy talking about others behind their backs in a not so nice way? And maybe give an example. I got this box on here, techie people.
Can you the X in the upper right corner?
There's no X. Oh, there it is over there.
And then some.
Okay. I guess we're all back. So we'll share for a little bit before I go on. So who would like to share something that came up in their group or what you were thinking of? So you can raise your hand, or you can come sit up here if you're in the Zendo. Okay, someone over here said you had a good discussion.
Go ahead.
I'll go first.
Okay, here comes somebody.
It's just very quick. We were talking, right? It was the last thing that we brought up right before you came back up, and that is that you never know what's going on with someone.
That's true, right?
You never know what's going on with someone. And I had given the example of that about around Christmas time, I had a lady that came through my checkout line at, I work at the Value Village thrift store in Tigard.
Mm-hmm.
And this lady came through my line, and she was very frantic and on edge and just kind of all over the place. And she was getting on everyone's nerves, to say the least. And her daughter was with her. And they finished their transaction. And after the mother just kind of walked off and started heading towards the door. And as she did, the daughter came up to me and said, "I am so sorry about all that. I'm so sorry." She just found out that her son, my brother, has cancer. So that's just an example,
right?
Is that you never know, because all of us are so quick to point the finger very often, but how often do we stop and think, how much do I actually know about their situation? How much do I actually know what's going on with them right now?
Thank you. Yeah, that's very good. We're going to talk a little bit about that, but not exactly. That was good. Anybody else? Do I see a hand? Oh, okay. Katie?
Well, I can go next. I don't know. We really focused on kind of why, you know, why do we talk about people? And we all confessed that we did. And I think it wasn't really actually always that easy to figure out why. And I had an example that was just, nobody seemed to have any insights onto it, but I just felt like it was that I would talk about this one person because she was kind of different in our family. She had different ways of doing things that were that seemed illogical, and we were just always trying to figure out what the heck was going on. But then we kind of moved on to talking about leadership and how much harder we are on leaders, that when they're doing behaviors that we don't agree with, or when they're not being skilled, that we're harder on them, that we actually will talk about them more than just our peers, you know, who might not be super skilled either. And so, you know, like, why was that? Probably all tied up with feelings of powerlessness, or, you know, I don't know if other people have experienced that when a leader is not doing what they're supposed to do, it somehow feels more, even more difficult. So anybody want to add anything to that, Nick or Paulette?
Even though it seems like the obvious, maybe thinking that we were talking about the president, the former president, we were talking about I was talking about my job.
That's what I meant by leaders, people who lead us. Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking about my principal at my school.
Yeah. Yeah. Our bosses, I guess the bosses. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, you know, we had also kind of mentioned that, like, kind of like what was said earlier, when it's people who are making sort of like decisions and are in positions of power, it's just easier to dehumanize them and like not think about them and their circumstances and how difficult it might be, you know, and you just kind of think of like, well, that decision affects me in a way that I don't like. So that's all that I, you know, am invested in that.
I think it's partly too that they're not ever going to hear it. You don't think they're ever going to hear it either. So that's that would be a definition of letting off steam. Yeah.
Franklin, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was just wanting to
make sure. Okay, Franklin, and then Julie.
Yeah, so yeah, mine's pretty short. Oh. I don't know if Julie's going to talk or not. I think a number of us had read the Robert Wright book about why Buddhism is true. And so I don't know if it came out of that book, but it's been an influence in terms of, for me, in terms of evolutionary psychology. It's been kind of a big part of the way I tend to look at a lot of things these days. Mm. And I think that the reason why a lot of that of trash talking happens, for lack of a better word, is has to do with social status and trying to create it within this sort of tribal, you know, context to elevate oneself relative to other people. And I think that's really at least the core sort of, if you want to think of it, driving force. But, you know, of course, everybody's own personal reasons may be different, you know.
Right. In one of the books, I forgot to write it down, but they talk about creates in groups and out groups when you do that kind of thing. Julie, do you have something to say?
That's exactly the same. In fact, in our group, it's with Karen and Marv, and Marv was the one who mentioned about in group, out group, and which reminded me about our basic, very basic human instinct is very tribal. So, you know, we tend to form groups and form ideologies around it and what should be done and what should not be done. And you're not the same as me, therefore I will talk about you.
Okay, thank you. No one else? I'll talk some.
It looks like Simone raised
her. Oh, okay. Yeah, there is someone. Someone just had their hand up.
Simone had her hand up.
I was just going to add to that in our group, we discussed a little bit about kind of the underpinnings of, you know, why we talk about others or, but where some of that comes from. And, you know, for some of us would include having already this established need to conform to some ideal that was kind of imposed upon us. So being super critical about yourself also can sometimes lead to you holding other people to a certain set of standards or ideals. and, you know, the kind of, you know, speaking about them or judging them based on that set of ideals and constantly holding others, including yourself. From a personal perspective, that is, you know, something that I face on a regular basis is kind of, you know, being hypercritical. And I think in our group, we all kind of agreed that it's very easy to even be self-deprecating in that way. And so kind of as an extension of that, also, you know, trying to hold other people to that kind of ideal, what you think they should have done or how they should have responded or. So.
Yeah, there's a lot.
And I think Karen had her hand up for a minute. I don't know if you.
Where's Karen? Karen, did you want
I'm
to
hear? Yeah, I actually was in the same group with Julie, so she already said what I was going to contribute. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, well, we'll have a bigger discussion at the end. I've got a bunch more stuff. This takes about a minute to read. I found it from the Rochester Zen Center online. It was called Gossip. Some people say, well, they'll never hear it. It was, my name is Gossip. I have no respect for justice. I maim without killing. I break hearts and ruin lives. I am cunning and malicious and gather strength with age. The more I am quoted, the more I am believed. I flourish at every level of society. My victims are helpless. They cannot protect themselves against me because I have no name and no face. To track me down is impossible. The harder you try, the more elusive I become. I am nobody's friend. Once I tarnish a reputation, it is never quite the same. I topple governments and wreck marriages. I ruin careers, cause sleepless nights, heartache, and indigestion. I spawn suspicion and generate grief. I make innocent people cry in their pillows. Even my name hisses. I am called Gossip. Office gossip, shop gossip, party gossip. I make headlines and headaches. Before you repeat a story, ask yourself, is it true? Is it fair? Is it necessary? If not, shut up. So this precept is also about how we think, how we see and judge others, and our behavior often follows our thoughts. We all have a lot of internal dialoguing, judging others. I know I'm always comparing myself to somebody else, whether I'm better or worse. I don't know how to get away from that. How do we stop doing this? Diane Risotto says that when we meet others as strangers, our hearts are open to possibility, change, and reconciliation. We meet that person in this moment with openness and possibility. And that reminded me of one of the first talks we had. I think it was with Mick, who talked about a full cup. You know, we think when we meet a person, we know them, but we don't really. We sort of freeze an image of a person. It's like beginner's mind. We don't really know a person. And another way to look at it, also in Diane Risotto, she talked about her father-in-law who's Italian, and he'd always say, il fatto così, that's how you say it. That's the way it's made. We are as we are, however we got that way. So we should accept people as they are, which is much nicer than trying to change them. I can remember when I think I was in my 20s, criticizing my mom. And I remember her saying, can't you just accept me the way I am? And I thought to myself, I didn't say anything, but I thought, well, why wouldn't you want to change the way I want you to change? And I feel bad now. And since then, my daughters have done the same to me, trying to make me a better person. And I want to say that same thing, but I don't. I listen to them and try to become a better person. A couple weeks ago, there was an article in the paper, and I tried to save it, but it was about someone who had been in prison for 40 years. And since he had been in there, he'd become a Buddhist. He'd meditated. He was teaching nonviolence. He was this model prisoner, but they wouldn't even consider him for parole because he had done this one violent act 40 years ago. They just had this frozen image of him. There is a big difference between thought and action. You know, action is pretty good, but thought is difficult. But if we can work on thinking of others in a more positive way, rather than just their faults, maybe we can stop with the negative words. Diane Risotto says, the thought finds its way to the mouth with lightning speed, and there's all kinds of juicy stuff in between. But it's not easy, especially this day with all the public figures we have that are saying nasty things, and it just seems like it's an epidemic of nasty speech these days. Constructive criticism is okay. This doesn't rule that out. But we can speak with the purpose of uniting people rather than dividing them. There was a story in Being Upright, I won't go through the whole story, of a Zen priest who, a Zen master who at the end of his life was very sorry for the mistake of speaking harshly to a monk who never recovered from his words. He was happy with his life, but he said he felt really badly because he ruined someone's life with his words. Well, I had another story. I don't know where that one went. Somehow it didn't get on here. So we want to do kind speech rather than harsh speech. And there's a story in Being Upright about a violinist who played for the great cellist Pablo Casals. You've probably all heard of him. And it was in his beginning days. And he made some mistakes. But at the end, Casals praised him exuberantly. And the guy was sort of mad and embarrassed that he did that. But several years later, he got a chance to do it again. And he was more experienced. And again, Pablo Casals praised him. And the violinist said, I'd like to bring something up with you, sir. Some years ago, I performed for you and did rather poorly, and yet you praised me highly. I did not understand what you were doing. Casals said, didn't you do such and such well? Didn't you do this other skill well? The violinist said, yes. He said, I praised the skills you had. As for the mistakes you made and the things you did not do well, I leave that to fools to criticize. My job is to praise. I thought that was a nice story. Pointing someone's faults out really doesn't get you any place. Let's see what time it is. Oh, we got... Sometimes I wish everybody could be Buddhist and be kind, because there's so much hateful speech in the public sphere. Or if they even follow Jesus, who said, judge that ye not be judged. And in Catholicism, it's a sin, actually, to reveal another person's real faults to a third person without a valid reason, thereby lessening the reputation of that person. I have a good friend who was raised Catholic, which was very difficult. But she told me that if she gossiped with her friends about someone, she had to go to confession and say that. So it's a bad thing in the Catholic Church, in the Christian Church too. So that's about all. I think we could have a discussion like, can we stop judging? I think that's a hard thing to do. And how can we do that? So these are some questions you can think about talking about. What about really difficult people? Is praising a form of judgment? And what do we do about all this slander in the public sphere? Or anything else you want to add? There is the behavior part, and then there's the thinking part, which is what makes us do the behavior part. So anybody want to say anything? Because it's still early. Is judging just the natural thing we do? Or can we just accept people how they are and love them the way they are?
I'll pop in real quick. I think that a lot of us probably would recognize this behavior as like almost automatic. It's one of these things that just happens so quickly. And one of the things that I really enjoyed about the Rosetto book in particular was that for the most part, she just encouraged you to just watch those behaviors, just be aware of them. You don't have to interject. You don't have to say, oh, well, don't say that. Don't do that. Just notice it. And I think that, like, especially with something like this that happens so quickly, like just noticing when you do it almost unconsciously, you know, you sit down in a room and you go, I'm taller than that guy. And, you know, and you know, just kind of seeing the way that the mind works. I think for me, like the way it ties into my practice is that it lets me know like how deeply entwined into delusion I am, because it doesn't matter. Like it doesn't really matter, but you know, just seeing it, how quickly it happens lets you know like how powerful that delusion can be, I think.
Yeah, thank you. I've become a lot more aware. Ruth Ann, did you
please, want to- Yes, these talks are good, are sharing. There's another part of this precept about not dwelling on past mistakes. And for me, as a poet, the word dwelling is, you know, of course we review for ourselves, sometimes too critically, but to dwell is different than to say, okay, I regret those words, I regret those actions, but dwelling is letting the mind just regurgitate and not growing out of the experience. I've been there, so that's why that was part of the precept I noticed. Thanks.
Yeah, there's the do not dwell on past mistakes, which could be about yourself and all that you've done, or do not engage in fault finding. A little bit different. Crystal?
It's Coral.
Coral?
No worries. So strange. People call me Crystal all the time.
Really?
Yeah, it's a chronic thing. I find this precept frustrating because when I think about it, you know, I had MySpace in high school and then Facebook in college, girls posting pictures of themselves, selfies and all these things. And it's almost like judging people is encouraged, particularly among girls, which carries into professional, you know, my career at work. And it's like, I understand it's encouraged. And in fact, I have instances where I partook in it just to be included in my friend group. And then, you know, I also see where it happens in work where women are talking, you know, women are pitted against each other and it hurts both of us when we should be lifting each other up in professional settings. So I try, you know, that's something I've struggled with, this precept, and had a hard time, you know, preaching this to my female coworkers in the workplace.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's part of our life.
Can't tell.
So you asked the question, I think, is judgment always a necessity? And I think maybe a different way to think of it is, you know, judgment is one, is kind of a harsher version of what I call discernment, which is just our natural, as human beings, we categorize, we, you know, we put things in, it's how we survive, essentially. So I'm back to the whole survival thing. But, yeah, so I think of it, I don't think there's, I guess this is a follow-up to what Mick was saying. I think it's unavoidable. I mean, I think it's just what our brains do, our monkey brains do. And so it's about awareness, really. And then, you know, the space between the thought and the action is really where the rubber meets the road, you know. So there's that. And then you asked a really interesting question about is praise a form of judgment? And I think the answer to that is yes. I think, you know, all these things have flip sides to them, right? And we don't think of praise as being negative, but I think it's also a way of, you know, putting evaluation on something that may or may not need to be evaluated. You know, or maybe it just needs to be whatever it is. So that's very symbolic, but, you know, that's that's completely accidental.
No, that's good. I mean, I was a second grade teacher, and I think I praised, but you didn't want to praise too much. You know, you want the motivation coming from the kids so they feel good. And if you're praising in front of all these other people, then you're saying that person's better than the other people. So praise can be tricky.
Yeah, I think as a parent, one of the things that I really try not to praise my kids for are like fixed things. Like I don't want to praise my sons as having this like fixed, like permanent quality. Like, oh, you're smart. Like that's I don't want you to get attached to that thing. Praise is very tricky. Anywho, Betty, you've got raise hand.
Chris,
a couple thoughts is that related to what Mick just said, a lot of dialogue about parenting now, and I think this isn't just about parenting, talks about with kids praising effort rather than results, like that it's not about what you accomplish or what you are, but it's about like how you're engaging in the world, which I find really helpful both in my parenting and in how I relate to people. But jumping back to the previous topic about, you know, whether praise is judgment. And I do agree that it is. I had the experience today where somebody, I was in another Zoom call, because that's what we do these days. And somebody made a comment to me at the beginning of the conversation that was praising my appearance. And like, I trust that person was coming from a place of good intent, and I know them well enough to give them that grace, but it actually didn't land that way. It wasn't something that I really wanted to hear. I didn't really want somebody to comment on my appearance and invite that. So it was praise in their mind, but it didn't necessarily land that. And I think that that's part of what makes this, what takes it from the level of a judgment or a understanding that we operate in the world that helps us operate in the world versus something that actually goes beyond that and has an impact on other people, right? Like my judgments help me sometimes. Like if I know that that person is unreliable, or has in the past been late to pick me up or meet me or whatever, that's helpful for me to go forward. But if I start to put that out into the world or to extrapolate judgments in a negative way, I don't allow that person to change. I don't allow that person to go have new experiences with other people. So there's like this difference in how we embrace our biases and our judgments. I don't know if I'm expressing that well or not.
No, that's perfect. Lori?
Betty has her hand, has her virtual hand up.
Oh, Lori's just moving her hand. Sorry. Okay, Betty.
I'm not sure how to phrase this, but I'm interested in other people's thoughts and wisdom on this. You know, when we praise a political candidate to sway opinion, to facilitate change, or do just the opposite and discuss inadequacies or biases or things that even facts that you know, it, if somebody is a racist and we call them out on that, or if we perceive somebody as being racist and we call them out on that in the political arena or in a personal arena or social arena, is that disparaging? Where's the line between gossip? Yeah, I mean, we all know that there's what gossip is and what fact is, but where's that line about not having judgment and not discussing it and not facilitating change because we're not discussing it? I don't know. I'm just curious as what other people think about that.
Anybody want to answer that?
Yeah, I'm on a commission and stuff comes up all the time and I find it easier almost to do it there is to just be really level and that you just don't say something, you don't not say something out of politeness, but you just be really straight about it. So there's not like a mm-hmm. hint of judgment that goes with it. You just try and say it so that it's like, it's just the facts, ma'am, or something, or I just want to know what you meant by that. And the reason to do that, especially in a decision-making body, is that you really want to be able to work with people. And but it doesn't always come back to you. You know, sometimes you'll get challenged. And, you know, it does take sort of a trying to stay really engaged and remember that they're people. And that kind of goes with the whole, like somebody, you know, somebody might come and present to us that's, you know, an elected leader or something. So you kind of want to, you kind of think, you could be doing better than this or whatever, but it's still, they're still people and you still need to maintain that connection and maintain, you know, but you can ask almost anything. You can say almost anything, really. You have to if you want to represent people or represent people who aren't there. But you can't, you have to say it in a way that is just, you know, not blaming someone else for it or putting them down in that, you know, that sort of edge that people have, you know, I can't believe you said that or, yeah. So I the bottom line is, yeah, they're people and you need to treat them well, but it doesn't mean you can't say just about anything.
Erica?
Just to add to this discussion, I feel like you have to also look at it in the context of the other precepts. So the one about not gossiping is one, but there's also the one about communicate truthfully. So if there's a larger truth at stake about a very important issue like racism or something, then you have to look at which precept are you gonna which one should take precedence in the moment? That's my feeling.
I would think you could do both, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do both. But yeah, it's like the truth shouldn't, or like, yeah, the truth shouldn't be hidden at the expense of.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this one isn't, I mean, you should tell the truth here. You just don't want to.
Yeah.
Paulette?
Yeah, I like that. Brought this up. But the idea that, Betty, the idea that there's like a kind of two sides to each of these precepts. And it's like, well, do you speak out in injustice? And do you call that criticism? Or do you, you know, I think it's important to consider the seed of the intention. I don't know the person who just spoke, but she made a really good point about how you have to look at the other precepts too, because they're always there's like two ways of, at least two ways to see them. And, you know, this idea of, well, it's important to speak out about injustice, and maybe you could see that as some kind of criticism or judgment, but it's kind of speaking a truth that's really important for others to hear and, you know, maybe something to be done about it. But then there's also like the critical side and, you know, saying things that could be potentially hurtful to other people that really don't need to be expressed or maybe can be more skillfully expressed. So, I think it all comes down to the intention.
Yeah, criticism is okay. When I read some of the books, you know, criticism that's helpful is okay. Because there's all kinds, you know, there's book criticism and movie critics, and criticism is good if it's not done in a disparaging way.
Looks like Simone has her hand up.
Okay. Simone.
I was just going to add, it was either last year or the year before, Franklin gave a talk on this precept where, I don't remember the exact words that he used, but essentially there's a difference between holding people accountable for their actions and behaviors than condemning them to be defined by that previous action or behavior, because you give them an opportunity to change. And in the scope of politics, like, you know, how many politicians have not changed their positions on something, or, you know, we leave opportunities for people to do that, but still holding people account for things that are harmful.
Hey, thank you. I think it's time, Domio.
Okay. Yeah, and I just want to say too that sometimes in the effort to keep this precept, Zen communities have failed to address shit that's going on. So, like, sometimes in that, it's so tricky, because in that effort, yeah. And we don't want to gossip, we don't want to criticize, but then, you know, we don't end up calling stuff out, you know, holding people accountable. All right, thank you. We offer the merit of this Sangha meeting to all, so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
Thank you.
Thank you for the wonderful talk.